Well, hi everybody, and welcome to the last lesson of our Kabbalah for Tarot Readers course. Do you guys remember any of the stuff we did before? Hopefully we'll have some of this in our heads, because there's a lot more coming up. This lesson, like the ones before it, is going to have a lot of information. A lot of it is going to be new, and it's going to be organized around a few central ideas. The ideas are central, they're simple, but they're very subtle. And they're deep, and they're powerful, and they're going to give you a much, much deeper understanding of tarot in general. Also, these same ideas are going to make your readings a lot stronger. They're going to give them a lot more range and power. By the way, some of you, I imagine, must be wondering if this is really going to happen. Is that so? I mean, do you still wondering whether, you know, your readings are actually going to get better, or do you have faith?
I've seen it already.
Have you?
Uh-huh.
Oh, good.
That one little thing you said to me in the last class, and I've started kind of integrating it into my readings, and I can see how it's made them actually easier for me to go faster.
I'm really delighted with that. I'm hoping that will happen. In fact, I'm sure that it's going to happen to everybody eventually. Has anybody else had that experience? You know, where some of the material that we've talked about has begun to creep into, you know, the readings that you've been doing?
Yeah. This is Adela.
Yeah.
Well, I found that.
Good. I can tell you that I've been working with this stuff a long time, and it creeps into my readings too, but just creeps. It's not the easiest thing in the world. It doesn't always show up. Not every reading needs Kabbalistic interpretations or Kabbalistic material, but it's really, really nice to have it. And it tends to be just the ticket. Every once in a while, it's just exactly what you need. I'm guessing, even for myself about this, that eventually my readings are going to be just enormous. They aren't enormous yet, they're just good. But they will eventually get to be enormous, and there will be things I can do when I've turned all of this information into real knowledge that is going to surprise even me. I know this, but I just haven't done it yet. As long as I've been working with it, it still hasn't happened even for me, although it's way, way better than it was. Ruth Ann, you've had that experience, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. It's interesting the way it sort of creeped in over time. When I first started learning this material, it didn't even occur to me that I would use it. And just mostly from being exposed to it and learning the terminology and the concepts, I found that there are definitely times when that's what comes first and foremost in my interpretations, and that's what's needed at the moment.
Well, we shall see, all in good time. Anyway, as usual, you know, we do have a lot of ground to cover, and we'll be moving, as usual, very quickly. So everybody has, I gather, a deck, a Tree of Life diagram, the 22 Hebrew letters, hopefully,
mm-hmm.
an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, lined, hopefully, and a 4-foot by 2-foot clear space, which I know is very difficult to accomplish, but I gather you've done it before. Do you have it now? Do you have a good, nice, clear space to work in?
Yes.
Good. Okay, let's begin. In the earlier lessons of the course, we spoke about two great numbers. 2 out of 3. There are 3 of them that we're going to be discussing in the course. 2 of them we've talked about, and we call them great because they contain secrets and meanings and mysteries that illuminate the mind. Without light, the mind's nothing. That's what it needs. It needs light to bring it peace. It needs light to give it rest. It needs light to give it life. And tarot, of course, is always the real subject of our classes, but tarot, like the mind, by itself, it's a dark place. Tarot is dark with unanswered questions. If you don't shed light on it, you might as well not even be dealing with it. Tarot is hopelessly bogged down in mystery if you don't have a system to work with. And Kabbalah is fabulous for unraveling that system. Kabbalah, with the luminous numbers that it has, these fabulous great numbers, fills tarot with light. And that's why all of us are here, to fill the vessel of tarot with luminous meaning. That is such a pleasure. When something fills up with light and meaning, it just makes you light up. I don't know about you guys, but it certainly happens to me. This entire course is about 3 numbers. We talked about 2 of them. So 3 numbers and their implications. And so far, we've spoken briefly about just 2 of them. And those 2 are the number 10 and the number 4. And each of those has shed its own light in the process. But we don't get the full benefit of what even they have to teach us until the whole process is completed. And to do that, we have to explore, as much as time permits, the mysteries of the number 22. before we do that, let me mention a different number, one that converts Kabbalah into tarot, and that number is the number 78. You may know what that refers to, you may not, but in an hour or so, the number 78 is going to become like a switch, like a light switch, and when you flick it, both Kabbalah and tarot are going to light up for you in an instant, just the way a room lights up when you turn the light on with a switch. So let me introduce you to the number 22 with a little story. Stories are a good way to do this stuff. Very small story. The story goes, and in the literature of biblical commentary, which is sort of the wellspring of Kabbalah, that before the work of creation was even begun, before Keter parted the veil of non-being and became visible light, the 22 letters of the alphabet existed in the void of Ein Sof. Now, you may not know what the alphabet is yet, but you remember Ein Sof?
Mm-hmm.
Remember nothing without end? The nothing that precedes the beginning of things? It's funny to think that there is something before the beginning, but in this particular system, there is. Well, the 22 letters were there before the beginning of things. The 22 letters are called the alphabet. Let me spell that for you so you have it clear. It's A-L-E-P-H, that's one word, and then there's a dash, then the second word is bet, B-E-T-H, alphabet. That's the name of the Hebrew alphabet, and it's incidentally at the origin of the English word alphabet, by the way. It's called that after its first two letters, which are Aleph and Bet, which are like but not the same as our A and B. So it's said that God consulted the alphabet in the making of the universe. Well, I guess that sort of makes consultant the oldest profession, because it actually precedes everything. And the way it turned out, everything from the thinnest abstraction to the very thickest reality was made by combining the letters in endless combinations and permutations. The letters actually became everything. Well, that should tell you right away that the letters of the alphabet are not exactly like the letters of our alphabet. They're not just vocalizations, not just the marks on paper that indicate the vocalizations. They're that, of course, but they also have a lot of layers of meaning besides that, and each letter is all of these layers at the same time. So, let me tell you something of the layers of meaning of the alphabet. So, are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. First, the letters are a symbolic and spiritual calligraphy. And I want you to write that down. They're actually drawn in order to represent things. They're visual images of the ideas that they contain. I'm going to give you some examples. You won't know what these letters are yet unless you're familiar with the Hebrew alphabet already, but you'll come across them later. So just kind of, for the moment, work with the words of this rather than the pictures. For example, one of the letters is called Yod, spelled Y-O-D, and you're going to see that in a few minutes. And the shape of a Yod is the shape of a flame.
It's a
flame, a fire. It's actually a stylized flame. When you see the Yod later, when you actually get a chance to picture it, you'll see what I mean. It's the first letter of the Tetragrammaton, which of course is the four-letter name of God. It's the first letter of a four-part universe. And that first part, which is associated with Yod, is associated with the elemental world of fire. So the fire shape is connected with its significance in the construction of the universe. That's connected with the world of fire. And that flame shape is incorporated in the calligraphy of a lot of the letters, because fire is important in many places. Now, there's another letter called Kof, which is spelled Q-O-P-H. And that letter means, literally, the back of the head. And every letter, all the 22 letters, have esoteric functions. And the function of Kof is sleep. And the shape of the letter is a graphic depiction of the spine entering the base of the skull. I don't really know much anatomy, and I don't really know much about the brain from a scientific point of view, but I suspect that sleep is one of the more primitive functions and that it probably is associated with the back of the head. A guess. One more example. The letter He, spelled H-E-H, means window. And its esoteric function is the sense of sight. and the letter is actually drawn to graphically depict a window. So you see that the letters actually have visible connection with their meanings. So once you learn them, the actual pictures of the letters will remind you of what they mean on a whole bunch of different levels. And when you realize that the letters are associated with the 22 tarot trumps, you'll get a whole different sense of what the trumps are about. Now, on the second level of meaning, the letters are sounds. And I want you to write that down as well. But they're more than just the vocal building blocks of spoken language. I mean, when we use a word, when we use a sound like m for m, or b for b, or k for k, those are just sounds. They don't actually mean much. They don't really do much. They just provide the basis for spoken language. But in this case, the letters are understood and their sounds are understood to be chants, mantras. And each one is equivalent to the sound of Om, that Indian combination of sounds that is supposed to have brought the world into being. The sound of Om.
A-U-M?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Here, all the letters are consonants, and they're much, much harder to pronounce because they don't have any vowels associated with them. But nevertheless, understood properly and worked with properly, each one is a chant. And each one brings the world into being in its own way as it's spoken. The third thing is that each letter is one of the names of God. That's a really remarkable idea. You remember our little story about the number 22? So if you do, you'll realize that if that's true, if it's true that the 22 letters were used to make everything, and if you think that each one of these 22 letters is a name of God, you'll realize that the whole universe and everything in it is made of the names of God. Language itself is understood to be the sum of the combinations and permutations of holy names. So whether you're aware of it or not, everything you say is holy. There's a thought to ponder. Fourth, each letter has a meaning. Each one is a word. I'll give you some examples, or at least one example. Let's take the letter Kaf, which is spelled C as in Charlie, A-P-H. The letter Kaf is translated as closed hand or fist. And it's attributed to the tarot trump of the Wheel of Fortune. Each one of the letters, remember, is connected with one of the trumps. The meaning of closed hand or fist is connected to the idea that this energy is the means by which the vast cycles of creation can be grasped. The cycles of the wheel are so huge that a means is needed to grasp them. And the letter Kaf is that principle. And the letter Kaf is translated as the Wheel of Fortune. And through the card, through the trump of the wheel, it's possible to understand those enormous cycles. And the card is pictured in such a way as to give you a sense of a closed hand. Fifth, each letter is a number. Through the letters as numbers, all the sounds, all the meanings, all created things are imbued with measure and definition and natural law. Properly understood, the letters give you the formulas by which everything, from the most internal to the most external, can be understood. Sixth, each letter is an element, a sign, or a planet. Every one has its astrological attribution, and through its astrological attribution, each letter exerts its own influence on the whole of creation.
Okay, each letter is a planet?
It either a planet, or a sign, or an element. So all the major portions of the astrological universe are contained within the 22 letters. You'll see that shortly. And just like any planet or any sign exerts its influence on the whole of the universe, so the letters do the same thing. Seventh, each letter is an intelligence. And these intelligences are akin to senses, like physical senses. Through the intelligence of the letters, both the invisible and the visible worlds can be experienced and understood. I'll give you an example of something. I'll give you a sense of this. And this is something you may integrate into your readings when this particular card comes up. The intelligence of the fool is the scintillating intelligence. And the fool senses the world around him as a scintillation, as a sparkle. The entire world can be understood to be created from the sparkle of the fool. Imagine in yourself, can you find in yourself the sense of sparkle, the scintillating sense? If you look around you, can you get any sense of that at all, or has it all been lost? The exact opposite of scintillating is the idea of what we call mundane. The mundane world has completely lost its sparkle. It's through the fool that we regain it. An interesting thought also, and a very different interpretation of the fool than one would usually come across. Eighth, each letter is both a color and a musical note. This gets into some very esoteric stuff, but all I'm going to say about it now is that together, they're the building blocks of both the visible spectrum and the audible scale. And together, they create both beauty and harmony. The ninth layer of meaning of the letters is that each one is a path on the tree of life. And each path is the experience of the journey between two sephirot, between two bottomless depths of wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. And each one of the paths, all by itself, brings the whole universe into being in its own special way. So from a certain perspective, the universe is born 22 separate times by means of each one of these paths. The tenth layer, the last one that I'm going to mention now, is that each letter becomes a tarot trump by an act of magic. In this way, each letter, with all of its layers of meaning and power, becomes a solid object, becomes a card. And you can use these cards to read and understand and even manipulate the forces of creation. And this is the root of how and why tarot works. In case anybody ever asks you, why is it that tarot works? How come it always works? How come it works at all? This is the reason. Every one of the letters becomes a tarot trump. Every one contains the power of everything that we've spoken of. Layer upon layer, meaning upon meaning, potency upon potency. Remember that these 22 letters are the actual material out of which the universe was created. And the relationships between them are the relationships between everything and creation. At least that's the perspective of tarot. All of this is a way of making tarot understandable, making it graspable. Remember, we were talking about the huge cycles of creation. Well, this isn't exactly a cycle, but it's a really, really big structure. And grasping it is not easy, but it's very rewarding when you accomplish it. The time has come to give you a list of attributions for all the letters. We mentioned that there are attributions, and we now have to tell you exactly what they are. It won't be a complete list, but if you're able to integrate and understand what I give you, you're going to know a lot more tarot. Now realize, of course, this only happens over time. The list by itself, what I'm going to tell you now, all the words and lists of information, they're not even information, it's only data. What you're writing down isn't even information yet. When you've worked with the data for a while, it becomes information. Eventually. Realize that when you first come across something, it isn't even that, it isn't even information, it doesn't even become useful until you've learned how to work with it. And when you have actually worked with this information for a long time, the information slowly gets digested and it becomes experience. And when all this stuff is turned into experience, at that time and only then does it have even the possibility of becoming knowledge. If you ever get to the point where this stuff has turned into knowledge, you will be some kind of person, I can tell you. So it's also interesting that this progression from data to information to experience to knowledge is a great model for learning, and it teaches you patience and persistence on a grand scale. These days, the tendency is to try to learn everything very quickly, to shove everything down your throat and march through material like some kind of an insect chomping its way through a leaf. I mean, just get through it as fast as you can. Go to college in 3 years instead of four, you know, that kind of thing. That's not really good for the learning process, and it certainly doesn't help you much here. Well, now, do you all have the printed Aleph-Bet letter sheets in front of you?
Mm-hmm.
okay, because we're going to start to work with that stuff now. You're going to need those for visual reference so you'll know what the letters look like as I give you their attributions. And you're also going to need that sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper that I mentioned to you before, preferably lined loose leaf or lined notebook paper, because we're going to be writing the attributions separately. So on your attribution sheet, you're going to need to make 9 columns. And you need a header at the top of each column. So at the top of the sheet, you're going to write the 9 columns in the way that I'm going to tell you. You will need to allow an inch for each column, unless I tell you otherwise. A couple of them will only need half an inch, and I'll tell you when we get there. So remember to write small, write neatly, because there's a lot of stuff to fill in here. I'm going to give you now the column headers starting at the left edge of the page. Do it vertically, you know, have the page the usual way. You know, the usual, do it in, I guess it would be portrait style. And what I want you to do now is at the left-hand edge of the page at the top, put the first column and call it letter, L-E-T-T-E-R. And that's where you're going to write the name of each letter as I give it to you. Now, column 2 is sound, S-O-U-N-D. Column 3 is number. I want you to abbreviate number with the number sign, because we're only going to give this column half an inch. Fourth is meaning. Fifth is going to be an abbreviation. I'll tell you what it is. AST period, ATT period. It stands for astrological attribution, which is much too long a phrase to write out in an inch. The sixth column is function. Seventh is intelligence. Eighth is path. There also you're going to give it half an inch. And the last and ninth column is trump. That's the tarot equivalent of the letter. So everybody have that now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now we're going to create the list of attributions, and I'm going to give you the name and spelling of a Hebrew letter, and you'll write it first under the Hebrew letter on its own sheet to identify it, just the name of the letter. And then you're going to write it again in the letter column on your attribution sheet, and then I'm going to give you the list of attributions for that letter in order across the page. So, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The first letter of the alphabet is Aleph. And it's spelled A-L-E-P-H. So write that under the letter, and again in the letter column in the attribution sheet. Its English equivalent, that is the sound, is a silent H, as an hour. So write silent H in the sound column. The number of Aleph is 1. It means ox, like the animal ox. The astrological attribution is air. By the way, there are 3 Hebrew letters only that have elemental rather than sign or planetary attributions, and these 3 do not have esoteric functions, so now the next column is the function column, so just put a dash, because there's no esoteric function for this one. The intelligence is the scintillating intelligence. So under intelligence, write scintillating, which is spelled S-C. I-N-T-I-L-L-A-T-I-N-G, scintillating. The path is number 11. And the trump associated with Aleph is the fool. By the way, when we're finished with the attribution list, I'm going to show you where every path and therefore every trump is on the Tree of Life. Okay, the next letter is Bet, B-E-T-H. Write it just like you did with Aleph on its own Hebrew letter sheet and again on the attribution sheet. Its English sound is B, just like the letter B, and its number is 2. It means house. Its astrological attribution is Mercury. It has a double function. Now here, you might want to write the double function as 2 lines, and the double function is life and death. Its intelligence is the transparent intelligent. The number is 12. And the trump is the magician. The third letter is Gimel. G-I, M as in Mary, E-L. The sound is G, the English letter G. The number is 3. It means camel. The astrological attribution is the moon. It also has a double function, peace and war. It's called the uniting intelligence. Uniting, U-N-I-T-I-N-G. Path number 13. And it's the priestess. The fourth letter is Dalet. D as in David, A-L-E-T-H. It has the sound of the English letter D. The number is 4. It means door. Its astrological attribution is Venus. It has a double function, wisdom and folly. It's the illuminating intelligence, I-L-L-U-M-I-N-A-T-I-N-G. Path number 14, and the Empress. You can see that we're going in order. The numbers are going to go in order, the paths are going to go in order, and the trumps are going to go in order, so a lot of this will be fairly clear to you as we go along. The fifth letter is He, H-E-H. It has the sound of the English letter H. The number is 5. It means window. The astrological attribution is Aries. Its function is sight. It's the constituting intelligence. C-O-N-S-T-I-T-U-T-I-N-G. Constituting. Path number 15. And it's the Emperor. The sixth letter is Vav. The number is 6.
What's the sound?
The sound is V as in Victor. It means nail.
Nail like a hammer or nail?
Uh-huh.
Nail like in the finger?
Nail like a hammer and nail. Just like that. And the astrological attribution is Taurus. The function is hearing. It's the eternal intelligence. Path number 16, the Hierophant. The next letter is Zion. Z as in zebra, A-Y-I-N. The sound is Z. Number 7, and it means sword. The astrological attribution is Gemini. Its function is smell. Its intelligence is the disposing intelligence. Number 17, the lovers. Remember that we're talking about paths here when we're talking about 17. We're not talking about the number of the lovers, which is, of course, different than that. The next letter is Chet, spelled C-H-E-T-H. It has the sound of a guttural H. It's a H sound. The number is 8. It means fence, like the fence around a piece of property. Astrological attribution is Cancer. The function is speech. Its intelligence is the house of influence. Path number 18, the Chariot. Then there's Tet, T-E-T-H. The letter is T. Number 9. And the meaning of it is serpent. The astrological attribution is Leo. Its function is taste. Now here it has a very long name for an intelligence, so you'll certainly need at least 2 lines for this. It's called the activity of all spiritual beings. It's path number 19, and its trump is strength.